Building Blocks for Climate Reparations. Act on Loss and Damage.
A series about responsibility, justice, and the question of how we respond to the climate crisis. Published by Konzeptwerk Neue Ökonomie. Climate reparations, in a nutshell. Why do we need climate reparations? The climate crisis is profoundly unjust. It is not a crisis that affects everyone equally, nor one that everyone has caused. On one side are those historically and structurally responsible for it. Countries, corporations, and individuals that have benefited and continue to benefit from greenhouse gas-intensive production, consumption, and economic growth. Germany, for example, is responsible for around 3% of global historic emissions, despite making up 1% of the world's population. It has built immense wealth and technological capacity through centuries of industrialization and colonial exploitation, and it possesses the financial means to adapt to the consequences of climate change. On the other side are those who bear the brunt of the crisis. Communities, countries, and ecosystems in the global south that have contributed least to the problem. Cameroon, for instance, has produced only about 0.2% of historic global emissions, yet faces devastating impacts, from floods and droughts to the loss of livelihoods and biodiversity, without the sufficient resources to respond or recover. When we talk about climate reparations, it is essential to recognize that the injustice is not limited to unequal emissions. Germany's wealth, stability, and high standard of living are inseparable from the historic and ongoing exploitation of countries like Cameroon. Through colonialism, extractivism, unfair trade relations, and neocolonial economic structures, the raw materials, labor, and resources extracted from colonial regions have directly fueled Europe's industrialization and accumulation of wealth, while leaving formerly colonized nations structurally disadvantaged, indebted, and dependent. Cameroon's vulnerability to the climate crisis is, therefore, in turn, not merely the result of natural conditions. It is the outcome of historically produced inequalities, the result of centuries of dispossession, resource extraction, and deliberate underdevelopment. The same systems that caused the climate crisis continue to shape who suffers from it and who profits from it. The line between those who suffer from the climate crisis does not only run between rich and poor countries, it also runs within societies, along class divisions, gender hierarchies, racialized structures, and other intersecting forms of oppression. Marginalized groups, including women, indigenous peoples, black and other racialized communities, people with disabilities, and low-income households, are often both the least responsible for emissions and the most exposed to climate harms. Climate reparations are therefore neither charity nor aid. They are necessary to stop further injustices and ensure accountability and repair by redistributing resources, power, and decision-making to those most affected, a tool to address the root causes of the crisis, historical responsibility, structural inequality, and systematic exploitation, and the centerpiece of climate and global justice, a prerequisite for a healing process between the global South and North. According to Maxine Burkett, climate reparations must at least include three core elements: an apology, compensation, and a guarantee of non-repetition. An apology acknowledges the harm done and accepts responsibility for it. Compensation, whether monetary or through other forms of material redress, gives tangible or symbolic weight to that acknowledgement. The guarantee of non-repetition, perhaps the most transformative element, commits the perpetrating parties to structural changes that prevent the continuation or repetition of the injustice. To make these elements more concrete, we have identified 6 building blocks for climate reparations that explain how these could look like in practice, in Germany and beyond. About the project. Looking at the current state of civil society, we believe that climate reparations are the missing link in a comprehensive understanding of climate justice. Despite growing awareness of the connection between the climate crisis, colonialism, and racism, the concept of climate reparations remains underexplored and often misunderstood. One major reason is the lack of accessible materials on the topic, particularly in German-speaking contexts. With our project, Building Blocks for Climate Reparations, we aim to close this gap by providing accessible, grounded knowledge that links climate reparations to justice, responsibility, and systemic change. You are now listening to one of these building blocks. Act on loss and damage. This fact sheet explains loss and damage as unavoidable climate harms disproportionately affecting the global south, tracing their historical and structural causes, exposing major funding gaps despite the new L&D fund, and highlighting financing as central to climate justice and reparations efforts. It is authored by Hui Mian Lim, an independent consultant focusing on climate change, gender, and climate finance, and a member of the inaugural Facilitative Committee of the Women and Gender Constituency. What is loss and damage? Loss and damage refers to the unavoidable impacts of climate change. Loss refers to beings or things that are permanently destroyed. For example, the loss of human lives or livestock. Meanwhile, damage refers to beings or things that are damaged but can be rebuilt or repaired. For example, damaged roads or hospitals. Loss and damage is categorized into economic loss and damage, can be quantified in monetary terms, and non-economic loss and damage, cannot be measured in monetary terms. Examples of economic loss and damage are the loss of homes, loss of jobs and income, damaged buildings and infrastructure, and destruction of crops. Meanwhile, examples of non-economic loss and damage are the loss of human lives, physical and mental health trauma, destruction of ecosystems and biodiversity, flora and fauna species threatened with extinction, destruction of religious or cultural heritage sites, and the loss of culture and identity. Loss and damage can result from extreme weather events. Droughts, heat waves, wildfires, floods, cyclones, as well as slow onset events such as desertification, sea level rise, glacial retreat, land degradation, ocean acidification, and salinization. In some cases, damage may irreversibly alter countries or places. For example, rising sea level submerging low-lying, small island states, and droughts depleting water supply as well as turning productive farmland into barren land. Types of economic losses can include income, business operations, agricultural production, tourism, as well as physical assets, infrastructure, and property. Types of non-economic losses can include individual, health, life, human mobility, society, territory, cultural heritage, indigenous knowledge, societal and cultural identity, as well as environments, ecosystem services, and biodiversity. Difference between mitigation, adaptation, and loss and damage. The Paris Agreement of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, UNFCCC, focuses on 3 pillars of climate action, namely mitigation, adaptation, and loss and damage. Mitigation centers on activities that will reduce greenhouse gas, GHG, emissions. It functions as preventative climate action to avoid loss and damage due to climate change. Adaptation centers on activities that will prepare communities and infrastructure for the onslaught of the climate crisis. It can only minimize or reduce loss and damage due to climate change. Loss and damage, on the other hand, focuses on activities to address climate change impacts that mitigation and adaptation activities failed to either avoid or minimize. Where is loss and damage happening? Who is impacted by loss and damage? For the year 2024 alone, the World Meteorological Organization reported 617 extreme weather events, including 152 unprecedented extreme weather events, causing about 1,700 deaths, 1.1 million people injured, and 824,500 people displaced. The total economic losses are still being assessed, and non-economic losses unaccounted for. Among these extreme weather events, heat waves and floods incidents were reported in every region. Asia, Africa, Europe, Southwest Pacific, North and South America, as well as the Caribbean. Although loss and damage occurs in both Global North and Global South countries, countries in the Global South are most adversely affected due to pre-existing conditions such as vulnerable geographical locations, histories of colonization by Global North countries, poverty, underdevelopment, and ongoing conflicts. Pakistan, for example, is ranked as the top country first most affected by extreme weather events compared to other vulnerable countries in the Climate Risk Index 2025. In 2022, Pakistan experienced devastating floods, considered as a 1 in 100-year event, where 33 million people were affected, with more than 1,730 deaths and more than 8 million people displaced. The total cost of damages was estimated to exceed $14.9 billion, while the total economic losses came up to $15.2 billion. It was estimated that the cost for rehabilitation and reconstruction would amount to at least $16.3 billion US dollars, and the population living below the poverty line would increase by about 8.4 to 9.1 million. In 2025, Pakistan again experienced heavy rains and flash floods from June to October, resulting in about 1,037 deaths and 1,067 people injured. The extreme events caused damages to 229,763 houses and 22,841 livestock. Moreover, the Global North has resumed its colonization of the Global South. It is recognized as climate colonialism, where Global North countries are plundering and exploiting Global South countries for their own self-interest in order to achieve their climate ambitions. For example, reducing GHG emissions through carbon credits from monoculture tree plantations and extraction of minerals to manufacture essential components in electric vehicles. This increases the inequality gap between Global North and Global South. Global South countries are lagging behind with increasing national debt and lack the resources and capacities for mitigation and adaptation to actions, therefore making them vulnerable to loss and damage, and resulting in increasing climate-induced migration among their displaced populations, underlining the blatant injustice and inequality at the midst of the climate crisis. Within the Global South, those who are most vulnerable and impacted by loss and damage are women, children, elderly, indigenous peoples, and marginalized groups. These populations are disproportionately impacted due to the structural barriers, for example, rules, policies, cultural and societal norms, they face living in patriarchal societies. These barriers have deprived populations of the opportunity to participate in decision-making processes on matters affecting their daily lives. Climate policies and programs that fail to take intersectionality into account, for example, race, age, gender, class, sexuality, ability, have worsened the situation for these populations. For example,
During the recent months of heavy rains and flash floods in Pakistan, women who were displaced and living in temporary camps reported that, in general, women and girls did not feel safe in the overcrowded camps and were vulnerable to harassment and sexual violence. There is a lack of safe facilities for women and girls, for example, private toilets and bathrooms, no menstrual hygiene products available, lack of healthcare services, and places to cook. The women felt helpless because they were considered as beneficiaries at the temporary camps and were not given the opportunity to participate in the decision-making with regard to the daily operation of the camps. Loss and damage in climate negotiations. This section provides the key highlights for loss and damage negotiations in the UNFCCC processes. These negotiations started in 1991 during the process of setting up the UNFCCC, when small island states led by Vanuatu proposed a scheme to provide financial resources to compensate vulnerable countries, especially small islands and low-lying coastal developing countries, for loss and damage caused by rising sea levels. The proposal was not accepted. However, when the UNFCCC was established the following year, it recognized that loss and damage was an issue. Finally, in 2013 at COP19, after decades of negotiations, the Warsaw International Mechanism for Loss and Damage, WIM, and its executive committee, XCOM, were established. The WIM is the mechanism set up within the UNFCCC to address loss and damage associated with the impact of climate change on developing countries, particularly those that are vulnerable to the climate crisis. At COP21 in 2015, loss and damage was finally recognized as a distinct pillar of climate action, alongside mitigation and adaptation in the adopted Paris Agreement. As the role of WIM becomes more significant, the Santiago Network on Loss and Damage, SNLD, was established under WIM at COP25 in 2019. The purpose of this network is to catalyze technical assistance for vulnerable developing countries to avert, minimize, and address loss and damage. A landmark outcome for loss and damage was achieved at COP27 in 2022, in which the Paris Agreement gave the green light for preparatory work on a new loss and damage fund to start immediately. The following year, the fund was operationalized at the opening ceremony of COP28, and it is known as the Fund for Responding to Loss and Damage, FRLD. Fund for Responding to Loss and Damage, FRLD. Just half of the battle has been won by securing a fund for loss and damage after nearly three decades of advocacy by the Global South countries and civil society. The other half of the battle is to ensure that the fund is financed adequately. On November 30th, 2023, at the opening ceremony of COP28, when the FRLD was announced, five countries declared their pledges to the fund: the UAE, Germany, the European Union, the United Kingdom, the United States of America, and Japan. Overall, the initial pledges came up to $768 million from 28 countries. About a year later, the fund had only received $68.95 million from a handful of countries, namely Ireland, the Netherlands, Norway, and the US. Germany fulfilled its pledge, or at least $97.2 million of the $100 million pledged, before the end of 2024, $44.4 million, and in 2025, $52.8 million. As of the end of August 2025, the fund has received only $559.63 million, meaning a shortfall of about $189 million in unpaid pledges. This is problematic because after nearly 21 months since the establishment of the fund, there is still no clear timeline of when countries need to fulfill their pledges. Table 1 illustrates contributions by countries to the FRLD as of June 30th, 2025. The question, whether the amount pledged is sufficient to address loss and damage, remains. As early as 2023, civil society was advocating for a minimum of US $400 billion per year to finance loss and damage. Even this amount is considered insufficient, as the projection model accounts only for economic loss and damage, while leaving out non-economic loss and damage, and civil society has further called for periodic revisions to reflect the evolving needs of the Global South. Civil society has pointed out that the initial pledge of $768 million amounts to only 0.2% of the $400 billion US dollars per year demand, a mere pittance. Even Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General, in his speech at COP29 in 2024, acknowledged this inadequacy, stating, "The creation of a loss and damage fund is a victory for developing countries, for multilateralism, and for justice, but its initial capitalization of $700 million US dollars doesn't come close to righting the wrong inflicted on the vulnerable. $700 million is roughly the annual earnings of the world's 10 best paid footballers. I urge countries to commit new finance to the fund." Instead of committing more money to the FRLD, developed countries continue to overlook this urgent financial need of the developing countries. This is evident in the outcome of the climate finance new collective quantified goal negotiation at COP29. The outcome only acknowledges that significant gaps remain in responding to the increased scale and frequency of loss and damage and the associated economic and non-economic losses, without providing any financing to address loss and damage. Civil society is currently demanding that $724.43 billion in the form of grants allocated annually for loss and damage. Grants are preferred to loans, as the latter would increase developing countries' existing national debt, which would worsen their ability to cope with climate crisis, including addressing loss and damage. In summary, what is the use of having the FRLD without insufficient funds available for developing countries, especially least developed countries and small island developing states, to address loss and damage? Why does loss and damage matter for climate justice? Although Global South countries are least responsible for the increase in global carbon emissions, they are the most affected by the climate crisis. The glacial pace of loss and damage negotiations, coupled with the lack of political will and financing for timely mitigation and adaptation, as well as insufficient and often ineffective measures that sometimes harm people and the environment, have worsened the impacts of loss and damage in Global South, depriving especially LDCs and SIDs of climate justice. According to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report, losses and damages are projected to increase with global warming. While limiting global warming to 1.5°C would reduce future impacts, it would not eliminate them. Each delay and failure to act intensifies loss and damage in the Global South, undermining hard-won sustainable development gains and crippling developing countries' efforts to recover and build back better. Developed countries, as historical polluters, have a financial obligation to repay their historical climate debt to developing countries in line with the UNFCCC principle of common but differentiated responsibilities and respective capabilities, as well as the polluter pays principle. Global South civil society has repeatedly emphasized that the Global North's financial obligations to Global South countries must come in the form of grants and not loans. Covering mitigation, adaptation, and loss and damage must be understood as reparations rather than charity or aid. For the Global North, loss and damage in particular is inherently political. Developed countries have resisted the liability language at the UNFCCC loss and damage negotiations, because it entails reparations, which has legal or financial ramifications for them. This resistance itself illustrates climate injustice. Yet, over the years, developed countries have distanced themselves from this responsibility and instead have aggressively promoted the mobilization of climate finance from the private sector and so-called innovative sources such as green bonds and carbon markets. Global South civil society rejects this approach, as this signifies that the developed countries are passing on their historical responsibility to the private sector. The latter's operation mirrors colonial extraction and dispossession, which is profit-driven and does not prioritize the well-being of communities, indigenous peoples, or the environment. Climate litigation. To seek climate justice, Global South communities and individuals have resorted to climate litigation due to the lack of response and the inaction by governments and multinational corporations. The following are two well-known loss and damage litigation cases. Saul Luciano Ilulia versus RWE. On November 24, 2015, Saul Luciano Ilulia, a farmer and mountain guide from the Andean city of Juarez, Peru, filed a civil lawsuit against RWE in a German civil court for being partly responsible for the climate crisis and the floods that are threatening his city. RWE is a German energy giant, a company ranked 44th out of the 180 top CO2-emitting companies globally since the pre-industrial era. According to Ilulia, the 50,000 residents in Juarez did not contribute to the climate crisis, and yet their city is being threatened with floods due to global warming. Additionally, the melting glacier from the glacial lake above the city, an ice avalanche, could overflow the lake and cause destruction and damage to the city. Nearly a decade later, on May 28, 2025, the Ham Higher Regional Court ruled that a company can be held liable under civil law for its contribution to the global climate crisis, even across national borders. This case is a landmark win for climate justice, and it has set a precedent for future climate litigations related to loss and damage. Pari Island, Indonesia versus Holcim, Switzerland. On January 30th, 2023, four community members representing the 1,500 population of the Pari Island in Indonesia filed a civil lawsuit against Holcim over its past, ongoing and future excessive CO2 emissions, which have caused and will continue to cause damage to the island, threatening the very existence of its population. Holcim, a Swiss multinational company, is one of the largest cement producers in the world and ranked 75th out of 180 top CO2-emitting companies globally since the pre-industrial era. The people of Pari Island are demanding that Holcim fulfills its historical responsibility and future responsibility. In other words, compensate for climate damages suffered and to financially contribute to flood protection measures, and that Holcim reduces its CO2 emissions. A preliminary hearing by the Cantonal Court of Zug was held on September 3, 2025, to decide whether this case is admissible. The decision of the court will be announced in the coming weeks. This decision will reveal whether the Global South population most impacted by loss and damage have access to climate justice. These are the first formal civil proceedings in Switzerland against a private company for its contribution to the climate crisis. International Court of Justice Advisory Opinion, Vanuatu Initiative. In 2019, the Pacific Islands Students Fighting Climate Change started a campaign to persuade their Pacific Islands leaders to take the issue of climate change and human rights to the International Court of Justice, ICJ. It resulted in the government of Vanuatu taking the lead to submit a proposal to the United Nations General Assembly to request an advisory opinion from the ICJ on the obligations of states with respect to climate change. This campaign became a global movement, garnering support from many countries and civil society organizations from the Global North and Global South. On July 23, 2025, the fight for climate justice marked another historical milestone when the ICJ delivered its advisory opinion on the state's obligations with respect to climate change. The court ruled that all countries are obligated to protect the climate system and environment from the impacts of human-made greenhouse gas emissions. These obligations include mitigation, adaptation, and multilateral cooperation. States also have a duty to prevent significant harm to all other states, vulnerable populations, and future generations alike. Failure to fulfill these obligations carries legal consequences, including halting harmful actions, providing guarantees of non-repetition, and providing full reparations. Notably, the ICJ's recognition of reparation in the form of restitution, compensation, and satisfaction, such as expressions of regret, formal apologies, and public acknowledgments, represents a major victory for advancing loss and damage. What is Germany's role and responsibility? Germany is the second largest contributor to the FRLD after the United Arab Emirates, and the largest amongst EU member states. Yet its contribution of $98 million is negligible compared to the harm caused by German emissions and the actual need of Global South countries to address loss and damage, estimated at over $724.43 billion per year. Germany's pledge represents only 0.014% of this annual requirement, effectively offering crumbs while expecting gratitude. Such a token gesture is starkly disconnected from Germany's historical and ongoing responsibility. Indeed, according to the report by the EU's 2024 report on GHG emissions of all countries, Germany remains the EU's top GHG emitter. While it is recognized that Germany has contributed and continues to contribute in some ways to loss and damage financing, climate finance, and other global climate actions, Germany also plays a key role in ongoing climate colonialism in the Global South. A recent report by the Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung exposes Germany's role in global resource exploitation under the guise of securing materials to decarbonize and transition to renewable energy. The report highlights how Germany has used bilateral cooperation agreements with Brazil, hydrogen projects, Chile, hydrogen projects, Indonesia, nickel extraction, Mexico, copper extraction, Namibia, hydrogen projects, and Serbia, lithium extraction, to advance its own self-interests. These are far from equal partnerships. While the Global South gains little, especially vulnerable populations, the impacts include deforestation, habitat destruction, displacement, human rights violations, as well as social and economic harm. This capitalist model of cooperation entrenches lopsided trade relationships, extractivism, increasing national debt, and perpetuates neocolonialism by Germany and other developed countries in the Global South. The evidence above underscores Germany's contradicting roles, presenting itself as a climate leader while outsourcing GHG emissions and extractivism to Global South, and not doing enough for the Global South while in fact causing further harm. Civil society movements in the Global South are demanding their right to reparations. Global North countries and polluting corporations have a clear obligation to pay climate reparations to the Global South countries, including its most vulnerable populations, for a century of excessive GHG emissions, environmental destruction, and the plundering of forests and ecosystems. Climate reparations are essential for achieving climate justice. What can Germany do to fulfill its moral obligation? Here are five key recommendations. It is high time for Germany to shift from a model of climate colonialism and extractivism to a climate justice-centered approach. In its climate cooperation with Global South countries, Germany must not only uphold the principle of do no harm, but also actively strive to do good, as well as acknowledge its historical and ongoing responsibilities and fulfill those responsibilities. Providing adequate resources to the Global South to address loss and damage and to build back better would help prevent displacement, reduce climate-induced migration, avert potential regional conflicts, and avert climate litigation against Germany by affected countries. Germany should also support structural transformations, such as debt cancellation and technology transfer, that do not promote false solutions. From the perspective of climate justice, Germany has the responsibility to contribute more to loss and damage, particularly the FRLD-SNLD. The amount must not be a figure chosen at will, but in line with the actual need of the Global South countries to address loss and damage. Also, the contribution should be proportionate to Germany's national responsibility for historical emissions, as well as current emissions. Beyond fulfilling its own national responsibilities, Germany should step up and take diplomatic leadership in mobilizing other developed countries, especially EU members, to significantly increase contributions to loss and damage, particularly the FRLD and SNLD. Again, these contributions must be proportionate to each country's historical and current responsibility for GHG emissions. Germany should take a leading role in UNFCCC climate finance negotiations to advocate for dedicated budget allocations for loss and damage, including for the FRLD and the SNLD, aligned with the real needs of the Global South. This includes actively supporting initiatives such as Baku to Belém roadmap to $1.3 trillion, negotiations at COP30. As of the publication of this fact sheet, Germany has yet to submit its nationally determined contribution, NDC 3.0, to the UNFCCC, which was due in September 2025. Germany must not procrastinate its submission. Crucially, Germany's NDC 3.0 must include far more ambitious targets for real and drastic GHG emissions reductions, both as necessary climate action and as a form of reparation to the Global South. Germany must not rely on carbon trading, which is a false solution and dangerous distraction from the urgent obligation to achieve genuine emissions reduction. The Asia-Pacific Movement on Debt and Development, APMDD, provides a comprehensive take on what reparation means. Reparation should not be viewed in a narrow sense of compensation, but as a means of restorative justice for historical wrongs. It looks not only to right wrongs in the present, but also looks back to the origin of the wrong and looks forward to repair the injustice to the best extent possible. Reparation is not limited to finance. It includes taking proactive actions to the fullest extent possible to stop global warming. For example, drastically reducing GHG emissions. Reparative measures include rehabilitation. A key element to this is a guarantee to not repeat past harms, exploitation, and abuse to the people and environment. Reparation cannot simply seek a return to pre-climate change conditions. This is impossible because much of the loss and damage is irreversible and continues to trigger negative impacts. As such, reparations should take into account the loss of future potential and opportunities, as well as include enabling development for building back better. Movements and campaigns on loss and damage. The following are the two key civil society movements that are leading the advocacy and campaigns on loss and damage. Loss and Damage Collaboration. This global network with more than 300 members engages in advocacy and outreach campaigns to amplify the loss and damage demands of developing countries within the UFCCC. The Loss and Damage Youth Coalition. This is an international network of young people from the Global South and the Global North advocating for ambitious international action on loss and damage issues.
You listen to Act on Loss and Damage from the series Building Blocks for Climate Reparations, published by the Konzeptwerk Neue Ökonomie. For more information on the topic of climate reparations, and our other work, visit www.knoe.org/en.